Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa for the Voice of America. I'm James Botti in Washington. Today is Monday, November 6th. And here are some of the stories we are covering. The United Nations says the humanitarian situation in the Gaza Strip is the worst since October 7th.
The sanitary conditions are very bad. In one of our facilities, we have 400 people sharing one toilet. So the risk of disease is happening as we speak, including diarrhea and scabies.
A spokesperson for the Israeli Defense Forces says the army has taken steps to protect civilians in its war against Hamas. Former Guinean military leader Dadis Camara is recaptured after a jailbreak. The East African community welcomed the possible extension of the AGOA trade pact. SADC discusses deploying a mission in the Democratic Republic of Congo.
For as long as we have the colonial project, where Africa is a place of extraction of minerals, we'll continue to have this.
And the World Food Program resumes activities in Eastern DRC. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The United Nations Relief and Works Agency, also known as UNRWA, says the humanitarian situation in the Gaza Strip has gotten worse since October 7. In its latest situation report, UNRWA says 79 of its colleagues have so far been killed. It also says 1.5 million internally displaced people are sheltering in the Gaza Strip, most of them at UNRWA's facilities. Spokesperson Juliet Tuma tells me that her agency desperately needs a humanitarian ceasefire to protect and serve all civilians wherever there are needs.
Since we've last spoken, if anything, the situation has gotten worse. So far, we have more than 700,000 people who are seeking shelter in our facilities, including some of our schools. The shelters are overcrowded. They're overflowing with people. We have women and children staying indoors, for example, in classrooms and the such, and the men and the boys are sleeping outdoor in the open. There's not enough mattresses for everyone, so some people are literally sleeping on the floor. The sanitary conditions are very bad. In one of our facilities, we have 400 people sharing one toilet. So the risk of disease is happening as we speak, including diarrhea and scabies. And meanwhile, we continue to lose people, colleagues of ours at UNRWA. So far, 78 colleagues have been killed since the war began in the Gaza Strip, UNRWA colleagues.
What can you tell us, Juliet, about this reported Israeli strike on a refugee camp on Saturday night? What do you know?
Look, I mean, no place is safe across the Gaza Strip. When we say no place is safe, we mean it. That also means not the north, not the middle areas, and not the south. Everywhere in the Gaza Strip, people's lives are put in danger. They have no place to flee to, by the way. Unlike in other crises that we've worked in, people could leave to safer locations, but they are not in this context or this crisis. So they're moving within the Gaza Strip, and that is also not at all safe.
The last time we spoke, Juliet, your agency was demanding a humanitarian ceasefire and fuel. Were you able to get this accomplished, and what is your new request now?
Not at all. We continue to call for a humanitarian ceasefire. Our Commissioner General yesterday met with U.S. Secretary of State Tony Blinken, who was here in our offices in Jordan, and they discussed the huge need for a humanitarian ceasefire and expanding the humanitarian operation in Gaza, because we're far too stretched at UNRWA, and also getting fuel on the convoys that have been coming into the Gaza Strip. So we're still where we are, except that fuel is running out by the hour, and so we need to replenish that. The whole of the Gaza Strip has not gotten any fuel, not even one drop of fuel since the 7th of October. It's been almost 1 month. And time for the ceasefire is running out.
Of course, the concern is that any ceasefire would allow Hamas to regroup.
Our concern is that a humanitarian ceasefire is very much needed and long overdue for the protection of civilians wherever they are. This is our top concern. This is why we're calling for a humanitarian ceasefire.
Julia Tuma is the United Nations Relief and Works Agency spokesperson. She spoke with us from Amman, Jordan. A spokesperson for the Israeli Defense Forces says the army has taken steps to protect civilians in its war against Hamas. This, as Israel has been accused of indiscriminately bombing civilians. Spokesperson Lieutenant Colonel Peter Lerner tells viewers Peter Clotty the IDF has taken steps to evacuate civilians from combat zones.
The IDF is operating based on principles of distinction, military necessity, proportionality, and weighing up the three of those components together in order to achieve our military goal. In order to conduct that, one of our main efforts in the last 3 weeks has been to evacuate people from harm's way. We've been encouraging people through text messages, through phone calls, through voice messages, through leaflets we've dropped from the sky, phoning people and encourage them to leave the combat zone. This is where Hamas is operating, in the north of the Gaza Strip, and you need to go south. It is safer in the south. There is no combat going on in the south. And that's what we've been doing. We've seen a huge shift of people. Around a million people or so have left the Gaza Strip, the north of the Gaza Strip, gone down south in order to get out of harm's way. We are still pursuing that effort today, even as the ground operations are ongoing and expanding. And I would say what we've seen in the last 2 days is Hamas actually trying to prevent people from going. So we saw it throughout the entire effort, but more so in the last few days. They were threatening, intimidating. They put up physical checkpoints to prevent people going south. And yesterday, when we announced that we would be opening a corridor from north to south, they actually launched RPG attack and mortar attack against the road itself, potentially putting people at risk. And we did the same today, and they did the same today. So they're trying to keep people, trying to keep them in harm's way. Of course, that is a huge challenge for any military to operate in the urban areas. And our goal is to try and limit the civilian casualties as the operation proceeds. It is an unfortunate reality of warfare, but we need to remember we did not ask for this war. We did not plan on going to war, so much so that the IDF actually failed the people of Israel, because we were working under the assumption that Hamas doesn't want to have a war with us. And they were able to conduct such a brutal massacre of over 1,400 people. And now we are responding to that to make sure that, not because of what happened on October 7th, 2023, but to make sure that October 7th will never, ever happen again.
That was Lieutenant Colonel Peter Lerner, spokesperson for the Israeli Defense Forces. He was speaking with viewers Peter Clotty via Skype. In Guinea-Conakry, ex-dictator Moussa Dadis Camara was recaptured and returned to prison on Saturday, hours after an apparent jailbreak led by heavily armed commandos. Two other former officials on trial alongside Dadis Camara over a 2009 massacre during his presidency were also set free during Friday's escape. Reporter Karim Kamara has details.
According to the Chief of Army Staff, Moussa Dadis Camara has been found and taken back to prison without specifying the circumstances of Dadis' arrest. One of his lawyers says he is back behind bars. It was not clear whether Camara had escaped from his own free will. Minister of Justice Alphonse Charles Wright said earlier that well-armed men burst into the prison and managed to leave with four prisoners, notably Captain Moussa Dadis Camara. He said the borders have been closed. He says it was around 5 in the morning when well-armed men broke into Conakry's main central prison. He says they succeeded in freeing four accused persons who are standing trial in September 28 Stadium massacre. He says they include Captain Moussa Dadis Camara, former junta leader, Claude Pivi, former minister in charge of presidential security, Colonel Moussa Cheburu Camara, former minister in charge of the fight against drug trafficking and organized crimes at the presidency, has been arrested and they are now in the main central prison. The army described the operation as an attempt to sabotage government reforms and swear its unwavering commitment to the current military-led government. According to Moussa Cheburu's lawyer, Jean Moussa Sovogi, the well-armed attackers entered the prison yard shouting the name of Dadis Camara. He said they declared that they had come to free Dadis. He says his client didn't escape from prison and he didn't run away either. He says, on the contrary, his client was kidnapped by unknown people. The prosecutor at the Court of Appeal says he has opened investigations into the jailbreak and against the four fugitives and their accomplices. Minister of Justice Alphonse Jasright asked how the attackers broke past the prison guards needed to get into the prison yard. He says investigations have been launched to identify those who helped. He says when you look at the central prison, the warders are always in the yard. So how did this assailant break through the line of defense? The Minister of Justice, Jasright, also said Chegburu Kamara and other of the men taken from the prison had since been recaptured. The government has not yet issued statements on the incident and the number of people killed or wounded during the attack. At least two people were reported killed, including a six-year-old girl. That is, and about 10 other former military and government officials are accused of a 2009 massacre carried out by security forces loyal to the then junta leader, the killing of 156 people and the rape of at least 109 women started at a political rally in Conakry Stadium on September 28, 2009. For VOA Africa, I am Karim Kamara in Conakry.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Monday, November 6th. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And still to come on our program, Samson O'Malley Sports. The East African community has hailed the U.S. move on the possible extension of the AGOA trade pact after a conference that ended on Saturday in South Africa. The U.S. Deputy Secretary of Commerce, Don Graves, says that the United States is committed to increased trade with Africa while engaging the African diaspora. Moses Javier Rimana reports.
After almost a year now since the U.S.-Africa Leaders Summit was held, the U.S. government says it has helped close to 75 new commercial trade deals with African countries for a total estimated value of $5.7 billion in two-way trade and investment through African Growth and Opportunity Act. The U.S. Deputy Secretary of Commerce Don Graves says that the United States is committed to boosting cooperation with private sector on the continent.
Africa is poised for massive economic growth. It is the fastest growing continent in the world. That's why it's so important for us to be well connected. We can tap into African diaspora in America, the more than 46 million people who trace their roots back to Africa. And we want to be true partners to make sure that our private sectors are working hand in hand.
Africa wants the U.S. Congress to renew its flagship trade program for the continent for at least 10 years. John Bosco Kalisa is the CEO of the East African Business Council.
It was really excellent agreement in terms of job creation, in terms of contributing to our economic growth, in terms of promoting those regional value chain, including the textile, leather, arts and craft to access U.S. market. So that's why we've been pushing at the continental level as well as the regional level, ESC level, to have AGOA extended post-2025.
The U.S. President Joe Biden said he is considering omitting some African countries, including Uganda, a member of East African Community. Uganda's relation with the U.S. deteriorated after Kampala passed the anti-homosexuality bill. Peter Matuki is the Secretary General of the East African Community.
It's in their own discretion to decide who to work with or who not to work with. Cannot really come and force anyone to work with whoever they don't want. And America is one of the largest democracies in the world. And they value a lot the voice of the people. And therefore, in this particular case, Uganda listened to the voice of the people through their parliament.
AGOA is a trade agreement that provides duty-free access to the U.S. market for special categories of products from eligible African countries. It has been credited with boosting economic growth and creating jobs in Africa and the U.S. U.S. lawmakers and the Biden administration are backing the renewal of AGOA, which saw over $10 billion U.S. worth of African exports enter the United States duty-free last year. For Voice of America, I'm Moses Havyarimana in Arusha, Tanzania.
The Southern African Development Community, SADC, has discussed deploying its SADC mission in the Democratic Republic of Congo to bring about peace and stability, but did not say when. At its extraordinary summit in Luanda, Angola on Saturday, the regional body took note of what it calls a deteriorating security and humanitarian situation in eastern DRC due to M23 rebel activities. Professor Sipo Sipi is a former deputy vice chancellor for institutional support at the University of Zululand. He tells me that a SADC deployment would be a positive development, but would most likely have little effect unless the one problem in DRC, mineral resources, is addressed.
The DRC has always been having problems with none of these guys being able to resolve that conflict. But what is positive, and we would have to wait, is the decision to agree to a form of deployment of resources to try to minimize and address the DRC question. But it's still a problem that many years later, we have not come to a possibility of resolving the DRC. I mean, this is more than two decades back. The DRC has never known peace since Lumumba died.
Professor, how would this mission or deployment be different from the East African Community mission there or from the United Nations force, which is supposed to be ending soon?
Well, I don't think it would be different. I guess for as long as there's a problem, there will always be a way in which you try to find a different way of approaching issues. Sometimes you may find that there's also an issue of fatigue by the people who are involved, and they would say, we go so far and no further. And others will come in and try to do their part. But I think until we go to the core of the problem in the DRC, because when you go to the core of the issues in the DRC, they all have to do with mineral resources. It's all a scramble for those. And you also have even multinationals that are engaged because they are beneficiaries for what has become an extraction industry of mineral resources. And some of the leaders in Africa are implicated. And for as long as we have the colonial project, where Africa is a place of extraction of minerals, will continue to have this because the so-called rebels or armies, they are giving resources to buy weapons.
So, but all this is coming, Professor, as DRC is scheduled to hold election December 20. What do you think, and is this election possible at all, given the insecurity in the east of the country?
I don't think so. I don't think so. I think if we want to have proper elections, other than a PR exercise to make sure that the incumbent is enjoys a certain form of legitimacy, then you can simply see this as nothing more than a legitimacy attempt or exercise in providing legitimacy.
Professor Sipo Sipe was speaking with us from Johannesburg, South Africa. In the east of the Democratic Republic of Congo, the World Food Program has resumed its humanitarian activities in Nyiragongo territory, home to several camps for internally displaced people. Reporter Zanet Neti Zaide has this report from Goma.
Maniragua Angel is a mother of four children. She has set up her temporary shelter in the concession of one of the Protestant churches in Munigi, north of Goma. Maniragua, who is from Kibumba, lives here in difficult conditions. Having given up hope after the World Food Program decided to suspend its activities in Kanyaruchinya camp, it only took a few hours of this Congolese woman to regain her zest for life. She says she's grateful to the World Food Program because if it hadn't gotten her back on her feet, she and her children would have died. She has four children, and the aid she receives from the WFP enables her to feed them. This resumption of activities comes after a plea by leaders of the displaced and civil society. Thierry Gasisiro, a member of civil society, recalls that the situation of the displaced is going from bad to worse. He calls for a new mobilization of humanitarian actors to support those Congolese who have fled their respective villages in the Kibumba territory and parts of the Rutshuru territory. He says it's important to take into account the newly displaced people from areas that have recently entered the war, who spend the night under the stars because it's time spent under difficult conditions. The World Food Program claims to have helped more than 117,000 displaced people since it began operating in the region. These figures represent 90% of it those who require relief. Despite the volatile security situation in the camps where it operates, the organization is determined to meet the needs of those in need, says Claude Linda, head of communications in North Kivu. He says the WFP is not going to abandon the vulnerable population. If the situation improves, the WFP will still continue its operations. But he says it depends on the resources. For VOA Africa, I'm Zani Mneti Zaidi in Goma, DRC.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports in Morocco, where Wydad Casablanca earned a 2-1 victory over Mamelodi Sundowns in the first leg of the inaugural Africa Football League final in Casablanca on Sunday. An own goal from Rivaldo Kotze and a superb late strike by Anas Shahat gave the Moroccan Giants the advantage to take into next week's second leg decider. Sundowns were punished for defensive lapses, but no, an early goal in the second leg could swing the tie back in their favor. It means Wydad will defend a 2-1 aggregate lead in front of over 40,000 fans at Sundowns Loftus Versfeld Stadium. In athletics, Ethiopia's Tamirat Tola produced a devastating performance to win the New York City Marathon in a new course record on Sunday. Tola, the 2022 World Championships Marathon gold medalist, powered home to take the tape in a time of 2 hours, 4 minutes, 58 seconds, shattering the old course record of 2 hours, 5 minutes, 6 seconds, set by Geoffrey Mutai in 2011. Kenyan Albert Kurie finished second in 2 hours, 6 minutes, 57 seconds, while Ethiopian Shura Kitata was third in 2 hours, 7 minutes, 11 seconds. In hockey news, the South African men and women's hockey teams both booked their spots at the Paris Olympics next year, winning their continental qualifying tournament deciders in Pretoria on Sunday. The women were dominant as they trounced Nigeria 9-0, while the men edged Egypt 2-1 in a nail-biter that was settled only in the final quarter after Rian Julius scored after a great through pass by Mustafa Kasim with 9 minutes remaining. In rugby news, Uganda has emerged winner of the 2023 Victoria Cup. A last-minute penalty goal by Liam Walker handed Uganda a 21-20 win over Kenya to win the first-ever Victoria Cup in an end-to-end match held at the Kings Park Arena in Kampala on Sunday evening. Simbas of Kenya had a roaring start to the match, putting their East African rivals to the sword through two tries in quick succession. The victory by the barest of margins was won courtesy of Liam Walker's penalty kick in the last play of the match. In boxing news, WBC silver heavyweight champion Ife Ajagba of Nigeria got his revenge over Joe Goodall in their rematch on Saturday. The hard-hitting Nigeria heavyweight contender stopped Australia's Goodall in the fourth round of their 10-round main event at the Tahoe Blue Event Center in State Line, Nevada. Referee Tony Weeks stopped their fight 50 seconds into the fourth round because Gudal had taken too many unanswered punches. And that's it for this Monday's edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good Monday. And that's it for this Monday, November 6th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for beginning your week with us. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing that you...